Hi, everybody. I'm Carrie Fury in for Kathy Lewis today. So what would you do if your college just shut down without warning? Well, over 35,000 ITT Tech students are asking themselves, what am I going to do now after the chain's permanent closure earlier this month? Allegations of fraud, predatory behavior, it's all drawn the attention from government regulators who banned the school from using federal student aid. Well, consider how area colleges are now responding to the crisis with Tidewater Community College President Edna Bear-Colovani. And we'll talk with one of the hundreds of former ITT Tech students refusing to pay their federal loans now after the for-profit school's abrupt closing. And all of these events aren't happening in a vacuum. Concerns about for-profit colleges in America are long-standing. Tuesday night, Frontline aired its investigation into what some experts are calling the most heavily subsidized private business sector in America. It's all coming up after your news. Thursday afternoon, everybody. I'm Carrie Fury in for Kathy Lewis today. And we're talking about something that is kind of near and dear to my heart here, because I am such a believer in vocational training. I happened to get mine through the United States Navy as an enlisted sailor to become a broadcaster. And I really think if the traditional college or university education is not for you or your student, there's nothing wrong with kind of pursuing that maybe more specific program if they already have an inkling of what it is they want to do. So not everybody walks into a recruiter's office. Some folks elect to go to some of these for-profit colleges and universities, your ECPIs, and what was ITT Tech? Well, you've heard about what's happened to ITT Tech, especially if you are a former student or the parent of a student, friend of a student. This for-profit chain, higher education, shut its doors rather abruptly after coming under some scrutiny, and being accused of predatory practices. And the government stepped in and said, you know what, until we can solve these issues or prove them to be false, the government did not come in and say, ITT, you have to shut your doors. That's not what happened. What they said was, we're not going to guarantee those federal student loans anymore. And that caused a great decline in the ability of students to attend without their financial aid being guaranteed. And that forced ITT as a business to say, well, this will not be very profitable for us anymore if we can't have students coming in with guaranteed financial aid. And they shut the doors down. Well, unfortunately, many students were not finished with their courses of study and are wondering, what do I do now? And it's kind of sent a nervous ripple through other types of colleges and universities like this, and the students who are counting on this as a path to their career. Joining me now on the phone, our first guest today on this Thursday Hearsay, is Edna Bear-Colovani. She is the president of Tidewater Community College. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation to speak with you.
So a couple of things that we need to talk about. First of all, I know that there is quite an effort over there at TCC to kind of catch and save and help some of the former ITT students who are desperately seeking a place to continue their education. Can you tell me about that?
Certainly. Thank you again for the opportunity to discuss that. Of course, as soon as we heard here at the college individually, but also the system of community colleges in Virginia, the chancellor immediately sent out a encouragement to the colleges in whose area there were branches of ITT Tech, and TCC, of course, has a one nearby located at its Norfolk campus that used to be open to the students, and that is right here in Norfolk. And so we immediately put a team of staff together to say, well, okay, what can we do to assist the students who are now all of a sudden faced with no way to go and no recourse, and it sounded so desperate in the very beginning. There's been some positive developments to help students on the path, but nevertheless, so the college immediately put together a triage team. We announced a special info session on Saturday which we offered at our Norfolk campus. We had over 100 students coming to the session on Saturday, and we had them triaged with faculty and staff and actually even students who came out to support what may become fellow students down the road. So right now we are in the process of assessing their transcripts to the extent the students had some unofficial transcripts. ITT released overnight on Friday a link to for TCC, not TCC, I'm sorry, ITT students to access so they can get their official transcript, although we don't need an official transcript. And so we're helping students to get an unofficial transcript. And then the government just forced them to release the syllabi, which has been one of the big stumbling blocks for anyone else to look at whether there is transferability of the credit work that the students have undertaken. Now mm-hmm. that we have access to the syllabi, we can look at the transcripts of the students and see whether the learning outcomes match up with our learning outcomes to transfer credits into a relevant program at TCC.
And what are you finding so far? What are you finding so far about that? Are you finding that the curriculum and the grades are comparable? So if I were 2 years into an ITT program, would that make me a sophomore?
No. No, unfortunately not. So far, every student situation is very unique. Because we're just now starting to get access to the syllabi, we still are not, it's not a real clear thing on how to crosswalk the syllabus and learning outcomes against ours, because the from some of the syllabi that some of our deans have told us, they are very vague, and it still requires, you know, the one-on-one discussion and maybe even a possibility of putting them into challenge exams. Mm-hmm. To see whether they can actually, you know, be equivalent to the learning outcomes in our courses. In some cases, the course selections, the gen eds are not quite as difficult to assess, although over the years we've had many students from ITT who have tried to get into a TCC program, and it's been very difficult to transfer general education courses such as math and English into our programs. The technical areas sometimes are so specific that we don't have even an equivalent for them here. Mm-hmm. There are some in the healthcare area, like medical assisting, coding, and billing, which are relatively easy to crosswalk. So it's literally, it's a one-on-one situation with every program student. And on top of that, overlaying all of this is, you know, they have right now no access to federal financial aid. As you know, the federal government has announced a loan forgiveness program for the federal programs that or loans that they have received, but it does not include the loans that students may have received from ITT Tech directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of them are facing serious financial situations. And the loan forgiveness program on the federal side only will apply if the students are going to completely give up on that track and start all over.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have not exhausted all of their financial aid and they want to transfer credits in and we are able to transfer those in, they're still going to be faced with whatever the amount of loans that they have acquired from ITT Tech that they will have to repay. So they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place.
This, we're talking about hundreds, thousands of students here, 1,500 students, easy. And it sounds exhausting when you say that you've got to look at their cases one by one and figure out a best path. So in order to do this, Edna, you must have great compassion for these
well,
kids. You must.
Well, we have to. You absolutely, you know, just think of if you were in that situation, you know, you were on your path to completion. I mean, we talked to some students who had One student needed to complete her externship in medical coding and billing this week. She was supposed to start that this week. That's the only thing that's preventing her from graduating.
Yeah.
Another student who is two courses away from graduation. So all of a sudden, all of that is precluded from you, and now you may have to start all over if there is no crosswalk against a credit curriculum in some other institution. And you're also going to, I mean, they've been preyed upon already, and now they may, regardless of what they do, they will have to, unless they choose the loan forgiveness route, will have to be saddled for these loans. You know, as you know, the tuition is astronomical. It's almost $500 per credit hour versus a community college tuition of $146. Mm. So what we're trying to do is raise money, actually, for emergency tuition aid. And I've gotten some really great response from the community. We have raised close to $35,000 already. My
wow.
goal is to raise $100,000 for emergency aid, especially for those students who are close to completing, so we could at least get them on their path to completion and into the workforce. The longer-term need is going to be substantial, I'm sure, because, you know, you're talking about, I think in this region we had, there's 500 or 600 students at the Norfolk campus alone. There are probably close to 1,500 in Virginia alone. And so the long-term need for those students who may have just, especially if they're like in the middle of their program, not having financial aid available, the GIs, the veterans with the GI Bill are probably in the best situation if they have not exhausted all of their eligibility. But that's, you know, been the business model by ITT. They, we've been told that they basically needed one full-time tuition-paying student, a veteran, with their GI Bill to offset the financial discrepancy for five other students who are on federal loans or loans from ITT Tech. So, of course, when the federal government said, well, we're no longer allowing you to enroll students,
sure.
their business model fell apart.
Of course.
So it's the financial implication. I think all of us in the accredited colleges are willing to work with them and be as flexible to place students into programs where, you know, you can make the really good justification that the learning outcome and the credit is applicable to our programs. But it's the financial situation that they're faced with, regardless of which direction they go. So we're looking at advanced standing options. We're looking at credentials that they might have acquired as
sure.
part of their studies.
Like if they were maybe an adult student coming back out of maybe the career force, you know, the workforce, and maybe you have to justify, you know, kind of reconcile their life experiences as core credit. Great to hear that you're also trying to do the same thing for some of these students. If you're just joining us on Hearsay today, we've been talking to Edna Bear Colavani, the president of Tidewater Community College, a great effort underway to try and enroll and receive and help with help the students who have been affected by the closure of ITT Tech efforts, even going into the financial arena, trying to raise now $100,000 in emergency tuition and already raised $35,000. Congratulations on that. Wonderful
you.
Goal and very compassionate
yeah,
act going
yeah.
on over there. And thank you so much for your time today.
Actually, may I announce two things or just quickly, because I think it would be important for the audience to hear that. We have on October 19 starting an eight-week session. So for the students who are for whom we're able to crosswalk their transcript, they are able to start a complete semester on October 19. In addition to that, we have several workforce credential courses that are starting in the next couple of weeks, so we're hopeful that we can get some of the students into those. And for anybody who's looking for information, we have a hotline specifically for the ITT Tech students. It's 822-1669, and they can go on our webpage as well. There is a special set-aside frequently asked questions website, ITT, the letters ITT, the number 2, tcc@tcc.edu. So anybody who's interested can go on the tcc.edu website to have questions answered, and we're hopefully that we can assist more and more students with that.
Thank you very much. That was well worth another moment or two to let folks know what kind of help is out there from TCC.
Thank you
so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much. Bye. It is 12:19 on a Thursday afternoon. Carrie Furian for Kathy Lewis. We're talking about for-profit colleges, specifically the closure of ITT and the effect that has had on so many local students. 1-800-940-2240 if you'd like to join the conversation. Locally, 440-2665. We'd also love to hear from you on Facebook and Twitter. Waiting patiently on the line today is Dave, who's calling from Rappahannock Community College. Dave, you're actually the Dean of Student Development, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you so much for calling in today. It's so great to have the perspective of administrators at our local community colleges, because this is yours is the doorstep upon which many of these ITT students are going to land and knock very hopefully, hoping that there's a place for them at your institution. What are you seeing?
Well, we certainly have our service region. We have a smaller number of students from ITT that were impacted than Tidewater Community College. But because we have such a large online enrollment, we definitely are getting calls from students as well. And like Dr. Colavani mentioned, you know, our tuition is excellent. It's the price for tuition and fees for one credit hour for us for fall is $152.90. So that's less than half of most of the 4 years and much, much lower than the proprietary schools. And we know the students that were impacted are really still reeling from the shock of having the carpet pulled out from under them, but we would want them to know there's still time. And our 8-week 2 classes start October 25th. So if they update their financial aid application, their FAFSA, and add our school code, which is 009160, and give us a call, we'll work with them to go through the process that Dr. Colavani mentioned to review unofficial transcripts and get them as much credit as possible and get them started.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel, and I'm gonna ask your opinion on a couple of things, and if for whatever reason you can't give it, I completely respect that, but I have a feeling you probably have an opinion on what I'm about to ask you. Do you think that the growing business of the for-profit college has hurt community colleges because of the perception that they are going to guarantee more place students, graduates more immediately? Do you think it's hurt enrollment in community colleges? Because when you say that that an hour of credit at Rappahannock Community College costs around $150 and an hour of credit at an ITT Tech costs $500 per hour, how is it possible that students see that as a better option?
In my conversations with students, often I get to work with students that are coming back to a community college from a place like ITT Tech even before the ITT shutdown, and I always was curious about what drew them to a proprietary school. And when I would ask them what drew them there, it was often the advertising, the marketing. And the reason that the proprietary schools can spend that type of money on marketing is the difference you pointed out between the cost per credit hour. So I do think that one of the things that happened that is quite unfortunate is students are lured in by the flashy advertising and don't understand that they need to really comparison shop like you would if you were buying a car or something on Amazon and finding the lowest price.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Often students don't understand that community colleges are accredited by the Southern Association on Colleges and Schools, just like four-year schools and just like the proprietary schools.
Yes.
So really, we know from some data I just read, 75% of students who complete a bachelor's degree take on debt, and the average amount of debt is $30,000. And a community college with a guaranteed admissions agreement can really help lower that. And that's important because the debt load that students come out with is going to really impact their future as significantly as getting that credential or degree.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in, Dave. I really appreciate your insight on this. And if you are in the area of Rappahannock Community College, just like TCC, they're ready to listen to you, work with you, and see what they can do to help you if you've been affected by the ITT shutdown. Thanks so much, Dave. Have a great
day.
Thanks
for having me. And just like Tidewater Community College, our website has a special section to help ITT students who were displaced. So if they go to www.rappahannock.edu and put ITT in the search box, it'll bring up the ITT Tech to RCC page.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad we're able to offer some good news today for these students who have their hands in the air saying, what is going to happen to my education and my career now? Okay, so we've talked a lot about the debt that has been taken on by some of these students, because not all of the the loans that they had were the federal loans that the government will forgive, because the government is the one who said, you cannot enroll any new students. We're not going to give financial aid to students enrolling in your schools because we believe the practices here are not fair. I'm paraphrasing, but this is a President Obama administration education department decision to investigate some of these proprietary schools because of the accusations of false advertising, as you've heard about, because of the unfair practices, the promises that they say are not delivered. And this is what they're hearing from graduates who have this debt, who have this certification and are not having the career placement and job that they were hoping for. It may turn out that some of these ITT students may not be stuck with the loans that came specifically from ITT or other places that were not a traditional Pell Grant or the student loans that we're more familiar with. I want to introduce Ann Larson and Chad Howard to our conversation. Ann Larson is the co-founder of the Debt Collective. It's a grassroots group helping to organize an ITT tech strike. Okay, this is a debt strike that's been organized. More than 1,500 former ITT Tech students have submitted applications to the education department to have their debt discharged. Chad Howard graduated from ITT Tech in Bessemer, Alabama in 2007. He is also taking part in the ITT debit strike. The group claims that the shuttered school has defrauded them with an education that they call a scam. Chad, I'm going to start with you because I've done, you know, kind of everything I can as the host, objective host of the show. I've done everything I can to not use the word scam because there are some legitimate programs out there, and there are some programs that at the end of the day, a proprietary college, for many reasons or whatever reason, might still be the best option for somebody looking to pursue a career. I think the message for everybody today is buyer beware and really investigate what you're getting into. That said, scam is a word that's out there, I guess, from former and current students. Is that how you would describe it?
Scam would be the nicer word. We were promised when we started ITT that we would come out with $90,000 paying jobs with education that nothing could beat. When we got out, we were stuck with $40,000, $50,000 in debt and pretty much a piece of paper. Because I was one of the lucky ones to get a job close to IT, but 90% of what I learned, I taught myself. ITT had nothing to do with it. But I'm stuck with all these debts from a school that doesn't even exist anymore. So I refuse to pay any of my loans until they get discharged or something happens, because this debt has been killing my family for 10 years now.
I noticed, you know, you're a graduate from 2007. You know, 10 years is a long time to still be carrying a debt after you've graduated, especially if you're not sure that this long-term investment you made as a student is ever going to pay off. Are you nervous about taking that kind of action, though? Are you nervous that there could be ramifications down the road if you just simply say, I'm not going to pay this debt?
Whatever ramifications is worth it, because we can't. These debts have driven us to the point where we, even if we wanted to pay these debts, we can't, because the interest piles up so much, they want more than what my paycheck is for each month of these payments, and I just have to stay and say enough.
Okay. Chad, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And for Chad, I'm sure there's always comfort when you're not the only one going through this. And I'm reading 1,500 people like Chad are taking part in this movement to just simply refuse to pay. Tell me more about the tech strike and what students need to know right now if they're deciding what to do.
Hi, thanks for having me. So the ITT Tech Debt Strike is an initiative of the Debt Collective, which is an organization that works with people in debt to form groups to challenge creditors, lenders, in this case, the Department of Education. So what Chad is part of is an ITT Tech Debt Strike where students are coming together, forming a collective and saying to the Department of Education, we are not going to pay these loans. As Chad described, these loans are from a predatory institution. These colleges, which are funded by our tax dollars, by the federal government, preyed on students for years, lied, advertised them aggressively, made false promises, and investors and shareholders made billions and billions of dollars over the years on these scam schools. Scam is not a fine word to use in this situation. And the students are left holding the bag, and they're not going to take it. And a lot of veterans attended ITT Tech, people who served our country in the military. Their GI Bill is gone, and they're stuck with unpayable debt. This is unconscionable. It shouldn't have happened. And the debts are going to be canceled, and we're going to fight until we get relief for these students.
If somebody would like to join this movement or identify themselves as someone who would like to participate, how do they get in touch with the Debt Collective?
You can visit the strike site at debtcollective.org/ITT strike. And there you'll see the strike and you'll be able to sign up online and get in touch with us. And we also have a Facebook page called the ITT Tech Warriors Facebook page, where a lot of students are gathering and planning actions and organizing together.
All right. Ann Larson, thanks so much. Co-founder of the Debt Collective.
Can I say one more thing?
That is the theme. One more thing is the theme of the day. Go ahead, Ann, please.
Okay. So I was listening to a couple of your other call-in guests talking about transferring to community colleges, and I really just want to raise a word of warning to your listeners. Transferring to another college, transferring your ITT credits, is a bad idea. This is not a good idea for the vast majority of people. And the reason is that if you transfer your credits to another school, you cut off an avenue for debt relief. There is an option for debt relief. It's called the closed school discharge. If your school closes while you are enrolled or shortly after you leave, you are eligible to get your debt wiped away. And if you transfer your credit to another school and complete your degree there, you cannot get your debt relieved as part of a closed school discharge. So everybody who's considering transferring their credits should really think very hard about whether they want to repay their debt, because it's not a good idea for ITT Tech students to transfer their credits. It really isn't.
Not now or not ever? I mean, how long does it take?
Never.
So they're better off
starting fresh, getting a debt relieved, canceling the debt, getting a closed school discharge, and starting over. It's unfortunate. People spent a lot of years of their lives, sacrificed time with their families. We understand that. But these are scam degrees. They're not worth anything, and they were overcharged. We talked to many, many, many people who can't pay the debt. They're in deep financial trouble. Take the opportunity. Get the debt canceled. Take a closed school discharge. Do not transfer to another school.
That's a good word of advice. And even our two representatives from the community colleges were very honest about the fact that they can't always do anything with the material that comes over from these schools. So they're not out saying, we can take those credits. We can take those credits. That's not the business they're in. So if you go and even just get the information, and I think that's a good gut check.
Right.
And if you're walking away thinking, not many, if any, of my credits were transferred, maybe the best thing is to just shut it down, have that debt forgiven, and get going again brand new with a new institution.
And more importantly, join the fight for debt relief for everybody else who attended before you did.
I think this conversation is going to have just about every educational institution being looked at under a microscope, which is a very good thing. Thank you so much, Ann Larson. Chad Howard, thank you very much. You're listening to Hearsay on a Thursday afternoon. I'm Carrie Fury in for Kathy Lewis. 1-800-940-2240, 440-2665. If you're right here in town, we'd also love to hear from you on Facebook and Twitter. Our next guest today is Martin Smith. He wrote, produced, and is a correspondent for PBS's Frontline. And he's got a new documentary, A Subprime Education, and asks those very tough questions about what is going on here and what is the government's role in this troubled industry, and investigates these allegations of fraud and predatory behavior that were actually first raised in 2010, Frontline had a documentary called College Inc. Okay, we'll talk a little bit about more that in just a bit. But first, Martin, thanks so much for joining us on Hearsay today. So this can't be a huge surprise to you if Frontline was looking into this 7 years ago at least.
That's right. So we started looking at this and broadcast College Inc. back in 2010, which looked at predatory behavior of some of these schools. And the misstatement of job placement rates and out-and-out fraud in some cases. So we decided that it was high time to revisit this, and so we just produced Subprime Education as both an update and a continuation of our investigation into these schools.
Mm-hmm. And what are you finding? I mean, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of good news here.
Well, you know, one of the big questions was, what has the federal government done? What has our chief regulator in this area done, the Department of Education? And what was troubling, on the one hand, they seem to me to be more on top of the issue now, but the actual closing of two schools in recent year, one just a couple of weeks ago, really were prompted not so much by the Department of Education, but by investigations by various attorney generals around the country.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Corinthian, it was the attorney general in California who alerted the Department of Education. It was disturbing to me to find out that still, after all this time and all this evidence, that the department was really seemed not to be on the ball.
We've talked so much about the Department of Education, and we've talked about the Education Department, federal loans. So in your opinion, Martin, should people be looking at this as well as an election issue? I mean, how could you not?
Well, it is a political issue. It is a political issue. And these schools have had a powerful lobbying presence in Washington, D.C., and have captured support from both sides of the aisle on the Hill. So it's a very politicized issue. These schools, when we covered them back in 2010, their stocks on Wall Street were flying higher than anyone else's. These are counter-cyclical businesses. When the economy goes bad, people lose their jobs, and then they decide to go back to school. And
mm-hmm.
these schools were there to, invite them in. And so they grew tremendously during that period of time. Now we're in a different sort of environment, and the schools have struggled a little bit. But if and when this economic cycle comes to a halt, we should be on the lookout because these schools depend on growth. They're on Wall Street. They're accountable to shareholders, not so much to students. And that means that there's a lot of pressure for them to grow, which means they have to enroll more students and become more aggressive about how they do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we started this this hour, this conversation, talking specifically about ITT Tech. But now we're talking about these schools as kind of a certain kind of business model that go by many, many other names. So if I'm a student who's enrolled in an ECPI or a Centura or a Key Business, if that's even around, because I do notice they seem to, some of them kind of come and go and seem to be the same thing with a different name in the advertising. Should anyone enrolled in this type of proprietary school be concerned right now that it's only a matter of time before their school closes?
I don't think it's fair to say that all these schools are frauds or are engaged in predatory behavior. But I do think you raise a good point. It's the business model. It's the business model that's accountable to shareholders, requiring, therefore, that these schools grow, that I think you have to be very aware of. And so not all these schools are necessarily bad. Some of them, I'm sure, are providing some good education to and giving opportunities to students that might not be otherwise served. On the other hand, the cost of these schools are very high. They're about three times more expensive than a community college. So they're targeting people that are at the bottom rung of the social ladder, people without a lot of income. They're loading them with a lot of debt. And, you know, you would want them to be offering a good value, but at three times the cost of a community college, it's not so clear that they are offering a good value.
Mm-hmm. But of course, have the advantage with a marketing budget much bigger than a community
Huge.
College. Yes.
That's right. I mean,
okay.
They are spending the kind of ad dollars that a pharmaceutical company might spend or a cosmetics company might spend.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of the teachers and whatnot is small compared to what they're spending on advertising. And that should give students pause. And they advertise during Maury Povich or Jerry Springer TV shows. And they have gone after homeless people, veterans. They're quite aggressive, and people are getting signed up for these schools, and promises are getting made to people that just shouldn't be made. I saw one guy who was attending ITT now 2 weeks ago. It closed, leaving 40,000 students in the cold. This guy was thinking he could become an architectural designer. And, you know, now he's in debt and has to apply to have his debt forgiven. But he's wasted time.
Sure.
He's not going to get that kind of degree. And, you know, given his situation, I have doubts about whether or not he can actually handle, you know, a real program in architectural design.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying there. That is the textbook definition of predatory behavior. I'd like you to stay on the line with us if you can, Martin, while we go to one of our callers, Brad in Norfolk. Thanks for calling Hearsay.
Hi, thank you. You're doing a very good job in Kathy's place today.
Thank you very much.
What I'm going to speak of right now real quickly is surprisingly true, and it's true throughout the country, the community colleges, and through time. It's not some fluke of one place.
Okay.
And that is in the community colleges, graduates who go on to four-year universities have a higher grade point average at the four-year university, have a higher graduation rate, have a higher percentage go on to grad school than the freshmen who went into those four-year universities and were there for 4 years. This came from an article either in the New York Times or our own local paper, and I've actually verified it with the president of a community college. And I don't know why this isn't common knowledge, but community colleges work. They're a lot less expensive. There's a lot less financial stress, a lot smaller classes, less distractions, less frou-frou. That has nothing to do with education. They work, and I think any student who has been defrauded or whatever the circumstance is should seriously consider the possibility of just starting over at a community college and understanding how successful they can be and how successful community colleges are. And I thank you.
I thank you for that call. I think Brad raises an excellent point, something I would like to speak with you to get your perspective on this as well. Martin, you know, when Brad says, why isn't it more commonly known that community colleges can be a great place to start and present a more focused, mature student to a four-year university? Why is that not more commonly known? Do you think we need to take a look at our kind of as a community, our feelings about higher education and what it is supposed to look like and what the best, and I'm making the air quotes here on the radio. So I'll try to condense my story into about 20 seconds. You know, when I was growing up, the expectation was you graduate high school, you go off to college, you go off to a four-year college in pursuit of a bachelor's degree. That is your step toward success. Anything different was lesser. It was kind of considered lesser. We all felt like we had to, you know, the best route was to college or university.
That's right.
We had to have a degree four, max 5 years later. Anything less was lesser. And I went on to Bridgewater State College, now university, fine place, and flunked out twice and ended up joining the Navy and received fantastic vocational training as a broadcaster, spent 5 years working for Armed Forces Radio and Television, and have parlayed that into, you know, a 20-plus year career. Now,
That's a good story, and thank you for your service.
You're welcome. It's good and it's unique. Not everybody has that experience, but it was never presented to me that, hey, maybe you would be better off being vocationally trained in the military. You know, there's an ADD diagnosis at 39 that probably is a factor in why I couldn't manage my time very well at school as well. But I'm a big proponent for vocational training because it's how I found my career. But I think the reason people might shy from taking a different route or giving community college a real look and looking at it as a first choice and not a last resort is because of the way society in general tells high school seniors, you must be going somewhere. You must know what you want to be when you grow up. And
yeah, I think it's a falsehood to think that everybody should have a four-year college education necessarily. What you want are opportunities. And those opportunities can come in many different shapes, forms, sizes, kinds of education. So the problem is one of, again, it's kind of marketing. We've been marketed the idea that we all should just march off from, you know, that those of us who are successful are going to go into a four-year college. And the problem with many of these people and sort of that are coming their first time family member going into college, their parents don't necessarily know the difference between a good four-year college and a predatory for-profit outfit that is running sort of more of a scam. And so they're, they don't know the difference between Everest College and the University of Maryland. So they easily can get, they think they're going off to a good college.
Especially if it's the voice they're hearing the most. As we said, if it is the voice you're hearing the most, it's the one that you're going to find yourself listening to, right? So if the Everest has the advertising budget and they hear that over, if they hear it the most, they're led that way. I'm sorry.
And the caller raises a really, the caller's done some really interesting research on this and showing the success rates of those who've gone to community colleges when they go on to a four-year institution. I mean, that doesn't surprise me. It's very interesting. These are highly motivated young people, but the problem is these community colleges are cheaper because they're not spending a lot of time marketing themselves. And they are... they're supported by states, and the budgets for these, we haven't put a lot of money into community college. It's sometimes hard to get it, to get a seat, to get into a class. So we're underfunding them. We somehow thought that if we just opened the market and let the market solve the problem, that by allowing these for-profit schools to so-called provide opportunity to this cadre of students, that we would solve the problem. But it hasn't been the case.
It has not. We thank you so much for your time, Martin. And, I want to mention that documentary, College Inc., again, came out 2010 on Frontline, if you'd like to find that, and A Subprime Education. This is the latest documentary. This is Martin's latest project, streaming at pbs.org/Frontline. Thanks so much for the good work you do on Frontline.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
All right. It is 12:46 now on this Thursday Hearsay. Let's go to Chris calling in from Thomas Nelson Community College. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to add my comments to that of my colleagues in the Virginia Community College system, that we are here and we really, really want to help any student that has been impacted by what has happened at ITT.
Can I ask you to react then to what Ann Larson said, who said it may be a bad idea for ITT students to immediately try to transfer credit to a community college?
We agree. And we haven't talked about the transfer. We've talked about information that we have put out is for them to resolve their debt issues first and really kind of take a minute. This is really a huge life event that has happened to them, and I wouldn't encourage anyone to make a real quick decision about immediately re-enrolling. They need to make sure that they understand all the ramifications of that first. But clearly these are students that, education was very important to them. They had goals, and I would hate that they would just, not continue. So to the extent that students are here living and working on the peninsula, I just wanted to say, Thomas Nelson is here. I think Tidewater has done an exceptional job, Tidewater Community College, of getting their information out and, reaching out to these students. And I really appreciate Brad's comments about community colleges and the success of their students. That was, I couldn't have asked him to say any more nice things. But I agree with the advice that's been given, but we just really hope that they won't just stop their education there.
Absolutely. So again, this is another voice echoing what Ann Larson said, that resolving the financial situation with ITT Tech, if you're a former student, is a separate issue than deciding how and where to restart your education.
Right.
And a community college could be a great way. Tell me more about Thomas Nelson. Who is your typical community college student? Who is coming into Thomas Nelson? How would you explain what our caller Brad said about why these community college students tend to perform better at a four-year university than your average freshman student?
Well, I think the best thing about a community college student is they're not typical. We have high school students taking college-level classes. We have middle-aged students. We have career switchers. We have students who have been in successful careers that are coming back to learn a new skill. We got workforce classes, so students are coming here. They're very goal-oriented. They may not be looking for a huge social experience. They're mm-hmm. wanting to get a degree or credential that's going to help them meet their goals. And we're going to meet them where they are and help them get there.
Thank you very much for calling in today. Appreciate your perspective.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Good advice. All right. Take care up there on the peninsula.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks so much for calling Hearsay today. Again, I'm Carrie Fury filling in for Kathy Lewis, 1-800-940-2240 or 440-2665. Molly in Norfolk is on the line. Hi, Molly. You're on Hearsay.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment about I went to a local for-profit college named Cooper Career Institute about a decade ago, and it unfortunately went bankrupt about 6 months after I left. I had happened to move to New Jersey after a semester at that school, and I moved back to the area a year later and found out that the school wasn't even there. I'm very lucky that I left before it went bankrupt, and I didn't get to be a part of that big turmoil. However, a decade later, I am going to Tidewater Community College, and I'm graduating in December. And I really highly recommend it to others who are concerned about their higher education path. Many of the professors there also teach at ODU, and I feel like I'm getting a really world-class education. And I really just wanted to make a comment that I feel so bad for so many of these people who've been victimized and sold that story. I was sold it too. And there is a better way. And community colleges are nothing to put your nose up at.
All right, Molly, thank you very much. Congratulations on that upcoming graduation in December. Molly also had an experience with a proprietary school that shut down, she said, 6 months after she left, and can certainly sympathize with all of those affected ITT Tech students and students enrolled in other schools with this same business model really need to pay attention to what's going on here. Our guests have brought up some great resources as well where you can find more information about the Debt Collective if you're interested in joining 1,500 other ITT students who have decided to basically do what the education department said it would do, not pay these loans. They don't want to pay their loans from ITT Tech. We'll put this information on our page later today. Right now, it is about 8 minutes till the hour. If it's Thursday, that means we also need to hear from Mal Vincent, who is talking about the one thing that super actress Meryl Streep really doesn't like to talk about. Here's Mal.
Okay, it's time to talk a little about Mary Frances Streep, known to you more as Meryl Streep, to a lot of us as the world's greatest actress. Now, I don't go with these superlatives a lot of times, but with this, they got it right. She is currently starring in the surprise hit Florence Foster Jenkins, a wealthy woman who thinks she can sing even though the rest of the world knows she's off key. Way off key. The movie has been around for some 5 weeks now, and it won't go away because, let's face it, to watch Meryl Streep in anything is worth a ticket. But I want to tell you a secret. Even though it looks like technique, she doesn't see it that way. We know that she takes over a character to the point that we forget it's Meryl Streep, and we don't know how she does it, and we're not likely to learn because she herself claims not to know. Now, we do know that Meryl specializes in accents. She can't deny that. She did a Danish accent in Out of Africa.
You've gone through all your money. You're seducing the servant girls. We are paying you and I mean, at least we're friends.
Australian in A Cry in the Night, in which the dingo stole her baby.
Dingo's got the baby! The dingo's got my baby!
She did Polish and German in Sophie's Choice.
When I was a little girl, my father typed and I got to sleep to that sound.
She did Italian for the Bridges of Madison County.
Carter's a farm. Small house close to the road. Big, mean yellow dog.
She did a nun from the Bronx in Doubt.
Mark my words. Ballpoints? Make them press down. When they press down, they write like monkeys.
I don't allow them ballpoint pens.
And yet here one is.
She did variations of English in The Iron Lady.
If you live in this country, you must pay for the privilege, something, anything. If you pay nothing, you care nothing. What do you care where you throw your rubbish?
And the French lieutenant's woman.
They told me to go up to his room. They looked at me. I smiled. I insisted he be sent for.
And she convinced us that she was the real thing in all of them.
Oh, I'm Julia Child. Bon appetit.
Now, I'm going to tell you a secret. If you ever meet her, don't ask her about the accents. It's the one thing she doesn't like to talk about. I met her several times dating back to when she played the Jewish role in the TV miniseries Holocaust, and I can tell you she is one of the least actorish actresses I have met. Now, the first time I met her, I'll admit I was thrilled, big time. Here I was, a reporter from Norfolk, Virginia, and I'm going to talk to the great Meryl Streep. The natural thing seemed to be to ask her about acting and technique. Bad idea. I was shocked when I met her. She giggled. I couldn't believe that Meryl Streep ever giggled. And she didn't want to talk about acting at all. In fact, she got a little testy about the accent things. So, she said, you think I'm a circus performer who jumps through a hoop. I said, well, Meryl, I wouldn't know a Danish accent, but you were consistent all the way through out of Africa, so I consider that is a Danish accent. She says, well, maybe I almost lost it when Robert Redford washed my hair. But you're right about being consistent. I have to admit, there is such a thing as voiceovers, and I do record over. True enough, in the years since, Mary Frances Streep has become more sure of herself. She doesn't giggle as much. She is more likable and more at home. So what accent is she doing in Florence Foster Jenkins? I guess it's upper crust New York phony.
When I was 16 years old, my father told me that if I didn't give up music, he'd cut me off. Of course, he didn't understand. Music is my life.
This is not one of Meryl's greatest performances, but I have to admit she makes us really care about a woman who loves great music, and in spite of all the odds, she thinks that she is a great singer, and we don't want to be the ones to tell her that she really is awful.
She's remarkable, isn't she?
She can be a little flat.
Flat?
It defies medical science.
If Meryl is nominated for an Oscar for it, it will be her 20th, pulling further and further ahead of Katharine Hepburn. She admits that Bette Davis was perhaps a greater inspiration and that she listened to a lot of Barbara Streisand albums to learn how to breathe and do accents. She says, I just listen. That's all I do. I just listen to people. And Meryl, we listen to you. Listening to Meryl Streep is one of the great pleasures of life.
Well, the same could be said about listening to Mel Vincent, one of the great pleasures of our week here on Hearsay. It's been a great pleasure to fill in for Kathy Lewis once again on this program. And thanks to everybody who joined the show today, starting with the president of Tidewater Community College, Edna Bear Colavani, and also very interesting, powerful conversation with Ann Larson, who is the co-founder of the Debt Collective, who had some She felt very strongly about the ITT students and whether they should immediately try and transfer credits or resolve their debt first before they continue their education or continue their education completely separately. We thank Chad Howard for calling in from Alabama, for being very honest about his experience with this school and the debt he has been struggling under since 2007. And also, of course, Martin Smith, writer, producer, correspondent for PBS Frontline. Don't forget those two documentaries are available to you streaming at pbs.org/frontline. The latest called A Subprime Education. You'll want to check that out. All right, coming up next here on 89.5, it's Intelligence Squared Climate. Tonight on WHRO TV 15 at 8 o'clock, it's Craft in America, following artists committed to passing on their skills and passion for their craft to new generations, followed by A Time for School at 9. Seven adults in different countries are visited years after struggling to just get a basic education. A little perspective for you as we talk about education in this nation as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. Take care.